Welcome to the archives of Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Spraying of herbicides to kill weeds and/or plants that are considered by some to be pests is a phenomenon that began in the latter part of the 20th century. These sprays, in many cases, pollute the water we drink and we use in our homes. They destroy and sometimes permanently alter not only the growth cycle of what we are intending to kill, but also other plants, animals, and sometimes people. Dr. Mark LePay was a widely recognized toxicologist who has studied the effects of these sprays for many years. He was a founder and a director of the Center for Ethics and Toxics, located in Wallala, California. He was also the former director of the California State Hazard Evaluation System. He's been a fellow at the Hastings Center for the Study of Bioethics in New York and published 112 articles and 11 books on the subject of toxicology. Dr. Mark LePay died in May of 2005. This interview with Dr. Mark LePay was recorded in February of 1997 and begins when I asked him, what is the problem with spraying?
Of course, it depends on what we're spraying, but if we assume we're talking about chemicals that would be used widely in roadside spraying, the current issue here on the North Coast, glyphosate or Roundup is the principal chemical that's fingered as the culprit or the agent for change on the roadside.
Well, we know that Roundup is something that anyone can purchase in a farm supply store. What's that first chemical you mentioned?
The first chemical is the same chemical. Glyphosate is the chemical name for Roundup. The problem with this chemical is it kills everything. Basically, it has a broad spectrum toxicity for any green-leaved plant. That is part of the reason it's used, but it's also part of the reason for its concern. The other element of concern is that while it's touted as being species-specific and indeed phylum-specific to only plants, it has toxicity for other organisms as well. We're concerned not only with toxicity to humans, but toxicity to other members of the ecosystem.
What does that mean, toxicity to humans?
What it means is that in long-term studies in our nearest neighbors, that is the rats and mice that are used in typical bioassays, if glyphosate is fed to these animals, particularly in the case of rats, you see clear-cut changes in the liver that indicate, and the bile system that indicate that this chemical is producing a toxic effect. It induces or activates the enzymes that are involved in detoxifying other chemicals. It changes the metabolism of many of the drugs that would be taken, like acetaminophen or any other prescription or non-prescription analgesic, would be changed in its metabolism if someone inadvertently had been exposed or ingested.
When it is changed, acetaminophen or Tylenol as its commercial name for it, what changes are those? How would they affect a human?
Well, the danger of any chemical that induces the detoxifying enzymes in our body is that many chemicals become more toxic as they're being, quote, detoxified. All of the chemicals, for instance, that are found in soot or car exhaust or diesel exhaust that cause cancer when and if they're metabolized in the body. And if they're not metabolized, they don't. Benzene, for instance, is not a hazardous chemical until it's metabolized in the body to benzoquinone and other molecules. So you don't want to be taking or exposed to a chemical that's activating your detoxification system. It's just not a good idea. The other elements about its toxicity that are of concern include the fact that at high levels it can produce genetic damage to cells. We don't know how this plays out in the human body because for many of these chemicals there's no threshold below which they don't injure some cells. For these reasons, there's a residual uncertainty about the long-term safety of Roundup. Even though it's freely available over the counter and it can be purchased by any one of us in hardware stores, it's quite a different thing, in my view, to have it sprayed along public right-of-ways.
I want you to explain why it's different in your view, but in layman's terms, can you explain what you mean by residual uncertainty?
Sure. When you put it into a long-term test to see if it produces cancer or genetic damage, the data that's been published to date puts it in a category of a suspect carcinogen or a suspect mutagen, which means that under long-term exposure, some of the animals that got high levels of this compound did develop tumors or adenomas, as they were called in the assay, of lungs and kidneys that aren't explained away as a artifact. And similarly, there is some damage observed in cell systems, although not all cell systems, that indicated the ability to produce genetic damage. So this by no means is a chemical that's gets a clean bill of health. It's not a non-toxic chemical. It's billed that way, but it's quite toxic under some circumstances. In the doses that you'll find in a fine mist and spray, if everything goes properly, probably not. But if there's an accident or if there's an error in the composition or if it's combined with a surfactant or another chemical that's dispersing it, its toxicity pattern may change dramatically.
This week in Mendocino County, Caltrans has stated that contrary to the wishes of the Mendocino County Board of Supervisors, it will be spraying along Highway 101 from Ukiah to the county line and along Highway 20 from Highway 101 to the Lake County line. Mark, what's the problem with Caltrans doing that?
Now we move into the area of ethics and toxics. I think there's a grievous problem involved with their overriding the Board of Supervisors' wishes, which in a democratic system really represents the will of the people not to be sprayed. It's an issue ethically about the rights that each of us have for non-consensual battery. We have no... There is no other circumstance I can think of, from human experimentation to medicine to behavioral research and psychology, where you don't ask for an informed consent before you expose somebody to risk. In this circumstance, along a public right-of-way, we're spraying a chemical which for some individuals, particularly those that are chemically sensitive, or for those who have preternatural and perhaps irrational fears about the chemical, there are quite considerable risks involved. Yet these people have no notice. They haven't been given the opportunity to give consent, and they're being subjected to a chemical battery. By battery, I mean in the legal sense of being an assault by a chemical.
An unlawful touching of one's person.
If you wish, that would be a way a lawyer might frame it. But from an ethical viewpoint, it violates something very fundamental. That's the main gulf here in understanding between us and Caltrans. From a purely bureaucratic point of view, Caltrans, I believe, senses that it's well within its rights to spray a chemical that could be sold over the counter, whether or not Board of Supervisors say yes or no, because they've been assured by the manufacturer of the chemical, Monsanto Corporation, that the product is safe if used, quote, as directed and as specified on the label. But they're not doing it exactly according to the label uses. Monsanto never anticipated that they'd be spraying along a roadside. They assumed it would be in a controlled situation, in a garden or on a field, a fenced field, in a crop situation.
How do we know this about Monsanto's testing?
Well, Monsanto has done an incredible amount of testing over the years. At least two of the labs that it's used have been indicted for fraud for the testing that was done on Roundup. They then had to redo the testing on Roundup. They have some ambiguous findings, but they've plowed ahead with getting it registered very, very aggressively. And you can read the label on Roundup. It says avoid skin contact. It says do not inhale. It has special precautions about washing and rinsing any container that contains Roundup, many of which would be very hard to follow in an anonymous setting out on the roadside with a crew who are not under supervision necessarily by a chemically trained person. For those reasons, I have a very, very grave crisis of confidence in Caltrans' ability to pull this off, and I'm very upset that they are overriding the public will in this case.
What is the risk of people who might be driving through an area that is being sprayed, or someone who might eat the mushrooms or the berries that would grow adjacent to an area that is sprayed?
The risk in those circumstances would be the result of an unusual biomagnification, that is, the amplification of the toxicity of these chemicals would occur in anyone who had an allergic reaction to the chemical or its dispersant, anybody who was immunologically sensitive, or anyone who had a chemical sensitivity that may be a neurologic and immunologic reaction to the chemical. Not a lot is known about the causes of chemical sensitivity, but there are numerous people for whom exposure to a spray of this kind with the dispersant would predictably precipitate headaches, memory loss, fatigue, sense of malaise. It would release the cytokines or cellular hormones that mediate the immune system and produce a feeling as if you had the flu, is the way some people describe it. It's not in these people's minds. I mean, this is a real phenomenon. Still others, like kids, after inhalation of a spray, could have an asthma attack triggered. And while this seems to be an unusual circumstance, there were a number of such reports after malathion was sprayed for controlling the medfly in the Los Angeles basin. So for these reasons, even though these are remote and small risks in terms of the total number of people who are likely to have them, if you happen to be that person, this is a very uncomfortable reaction to this toxic chemical.
I want to take a moment and say that my guest this week is Dr. Mark LePay, a widely recognized toxicologist who holds a doctor of philosophy in that field and who presently directs the Center for Ethics and Toxics, located in Walla, California. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Mark, when we have the situation of somebody buying Roundup at a hardware store and spraying it in their yard, there's more of an active individual participation. You were distinguishing a few moments ago about how if someone is sprayed against their will by Caltrans or by the government, what are the ethical considerations of that?
Well, that's a great question, I think. When I or anyone else goes out and buys a chemical and hopefully reads the label and understands and has gotten a picture of the toxicity and the possible benefits that may accrue if I use the chemical for my sense of aesthetics, my garden, my food crop, my willingness and tolerance to accept toxic substances, I've made an informed choice. And I've consciously accepted a certain amount of risk for myself and hopefully not for my pets or others. Who may be inadvertently exposed to the chemical. I control the chemical. I spray it where I want it to go. And I, for better or worse, will take the consequences of those acts. When a public right-of-way is sprayed by Caltrans, for those people who are inadvertently exposed, and I know Caltrans doesn't intentionally spray anybody, the endpoint is quite different ethically. It's a non-consensual exposure. It's an exposure that was neither asked for or for which there are any benefits to that individual, which the individual bears risks for a program that they have voted through their Board of Supervisors not to want. Caltrans is a public agency. They belong to us. That is, they are working at our discretion, our judgment. If we put out a voter package and said we don't want Caltrans to operate anymore and we want this handled by the private sector and we will only do it under contract with strict controls, we have the privilege to do that. Seems to me that the Mendocino Board of Supervisors, while not going that full direction, made its will expressly known, as they did when the EIR was originally done. We were the only Board of Supervisors in the 1980s that wrote to Caltrans when they did the EIR and said, don't spray. We voted 6 months ago unanimously not to spray. And the Board of Supervisors voted as recently as last week again not to spray. For them to proceed and continue to spray, in particular since they honored that request in Marin County 10 years ago not to spray, it flies in the face of the public will. And I don't care if it sets a precedent or doesn't set a precedent. We're in a democracy here. and there's a certain amount of chemical, a certain element of chemical tyranny involved with overriding a democratic decision and using a chemical to non-consensually expose the population.
In your experience as a professor of ethics and health policy at the College of Medicine at the University of Illinois in Chicago, have you run across ethical or governmental arguments that would support the right of the government to spray under these circumstances?
That's a good question. Whenever we've had an issue like that, for instance, an issue where as hospital policy in the University of Illinois Hospital may decide that all people should be tested for HIV, whether they know about it or not, or that all wards are to be sprayed with hexachlorophene, a very toxic antiseptic. The ethical review committees of that hospital that I sat on that reviewed those policies was able to point out to the administrator that no matter how sound medically that policy appeared to be, it so violated the principles that were developed in the Nuremberg Code and extended through the basic precepts of medical ethics that it was simply unconscionable to have a policy that overrode individual consent and knowledge and awareness of procedures that were being done. The kind of paternalism that was exercised in the past by the medical profession has long been regarded as passé, if not outrageous. Yet we're tolerating the same kind of paternalism on the part of a public agency, Caltrans, that believes it's acting in their vested interest to achieve their goals, which are to have adequately clear lines of sight along roadways, that does not comport with what the public who live along those roadways believe. And it is insufficient, for instance, for them to say, well, we'll give people the right to dissent if they want to. That's like saying you have the right to refuse medication if you elect to do so, but otherwise everyone is going to be exposed. People who have the so-called right to petition Caltrans and get an injunction against spraying along their private right-of-way is a very weak ethical solution to a major problem of paternalism and chemical exposure.
To what extent is this kind of spraying going on throughout the state of California or other states?
My knowledge is that in states like Oregon, spraying is not going on actively. That is, they're using biological controls and mechanical controls. They're planting different grasses along the roadside and using biological mechanisms to control it. Elsewhere in California, Caltrans has been spraying with abandon for years. During the whole time that the EIR was under review, it continued to do spray, although there was a three-year hiatus when it did not, as I understand it, from 89 to 92. But my understanding, as one of the principals that worked with the Sierra Club Legal Defense in working out a compromise with Caltrans, was that they had promised to not use spraying as the main mechanism of controlling roadside vegetation in 1989 and reaffirmed it in 1992 in that EIR that they produced.
On a larger spectrum, on perhaps even a global spectrum, what effect do you believe spraying of this sort, or include other sorts if appropriate, has on our species as Homo sapiens, on other species that with which we share the world?
Spraying and chemical reliance is becoming a dominant theme both on a microcosm with this roadside spraying, which is simply symbolic of a much more massive spray program that's going on worldwide, where glyphosate in particular is becoming the number one pesticide. We are not merely exerting a chemical dominance over these ecosystems, but we are creating a chemical dependency in these ecosystems. Monsanto has bought out four major seed companies recently and has lines of seed and germplasm that it sells that has got a genetically engineered gene for resistance to Roundup, which permits the farmer to spray literally hundreds of times more of the pesticide on their fields at different times of year to control, quote, unwanted vegetation. What this does is create an evolutionary impact on the planet, where we are selecting for monocultures that are types of plants that have only a single genetic heritage, where we're reducing genetic diversity, where we're endangering literally thousands of other species whose resistance to these herbicides is nil or undetermined. We're creating havoc in the microecosystem in the soil.
Explain that. Talk about that.
Every time you spray a pesticide, even something as simple as 2,4-D or one of the agents used and combined with fertilizer these days, you change the entire substructure of the thousands of species that make up the mycorrhizia on plants that help fix nitrogen, the bacterial forms and fungal spores and forms that live in the soil are all impacted by these herbicides, some which are annihilated. And those that grow back typically are resistant to the herbicide, and the new ecosystem that regenerates is almost always simpler in its composition. That is, it has fewer species than before the herbicide was used. Then if you go cold turkey and suddenly the herbicide is not present, then it's a opportunistic situation analogous to an AIDS patient. You have a chemically depleted soil population. Any opportunistic species that can now take hold and grow will grow. On a macro scale, when you use an herbicide like Roundup, the first plants to recolonize the area are typically those with the hardiest seeds, because this is not a pre-emergent spray but a post-emergent spray. And you will have an epidemic, predictably, of gorse, scotch broom, and other opportunistic weeds that have the selective advantage in disturbed ecosystems. When we use an herbicide, then, in a global sense, we are creating evolutionary havoc, more often than not. The impacts are profound just where we can't see it, that is, below the surface of the soil, where the glyphosate adsorbs the soil particles and persists for a protracted period. 27 to 240 days is a typical survival curve for glyphosate in the soil, even though water may not become contaminated because glyphosate binds so tightly to the soil particles. The bacteria that live on those and in those soil particles are radically affected.
Mark, what can an individual or groups of individuals do to make their feelings known about this?
Well, if people have objections to the roadside spray program, I would love to see them vote with their feet in the demonstrations that are being planned by the Mendocino Environmental Center in Ukiah. And we can give you a number for them. In the meantime, I think it would be very appropriate for people to make their wishes known to their board of supervisors, to call their representative and let them know. It will have more of an impact to call a supervisor than to call Caltrans, in my judgment. The number for the Mendocino Environmental Center that is coordinating the physical demonstrations that are planned is 468-1660. To repeat it, it's 468-1660. And if you expressed your interest in making a personal statement or voting with your feet or actually demonstrating, that's the place to do it.
Well, I appreciate your thoughts on this issue, and I want to dwell for a moment or two before we close on the global impacts, the extent of spraying in other parts of the world.
Well, herbicide use in particular is expanding logarithmically with each passing year as companies conduct these tremendous public relations campaigns to demonstrate that the so-called high-yield strains of wheat, rice, corn, and other crops can only achieve those yields if you use the chemical suppressants that go with them to keep weeds in check. Instead of having a balanced ecosystem, for instance, for growing coffee that supports thousands and thousands of species under a forest canopy, annihilating the forest canopy, allowing the shaded, normally shaded plants to get full sun, creates further dependency on herbicides to keep unwanted plants from growing. We get on a cycle of dependency very, very quickly. Globally, we're creating that dependency through an intense sales campaign, a public relations campaign, that fails to recognize or show any wisdom about the evolutionary impacts of the wide-scale use of herbicides.
That's what I want to know about. What's going to happen in 50 or 100 or 200 years?
To 100 project? Years, almost all the cotton in the United States, all the soybeans, canola, tomatoes, corn, and potatoes will be of genetically engineered to be resistant to glyphosate if nothing else is done. That herbicide will become the most prevalent herbicide used in world commerce and certainly in the developed nations.
That's a genetic engineering that happens naturally by the evolution and growth of the plants.
Well, that's where the genes were stolen from by Monsanto. They found weeds that were resistant to glyphosate. They seized the gene. They engineered those genes back into the seeds and germplasm of soybeans and cotton in particular. And they then are making all the seed that would normally produce a soybean crop. I believe 16% of the soybean crop currently seeded in the United States is called Roundup Ready. That's their brand name. That means it's ready to get a saturated treatment with Roundup, and everything else around it will be annihilated except for that soy plant. When this happens in the next 10 years, not 50, we will have what we will think we have, what we had when the antibiotic era started, a fail-safe system for domination over a unwanted pest, in this case weeds. In fact, what will happen is that there will be a tremendous proliferation of resistant plants, and we'll have driven the selection, just as we did for antibiotic-resistant bacteria, into pesticide-resistant plants with new properties, not just resistance to the chemicals, that will make farming much more difficult. So we'll have a short-term burst of productivity, higher dependence on fertilizer and chemicals, and then we'll have a crash, just as we're having now with antibiotic-resistant strains of bacteria.
Dr. Mark LePay, I want to thank you for joining us on Radio Curious, but before we close, I want to ask you the question I ask all of my guests at this time, and that is, could you please tell us of an interesting book that you've read lately?
I would strongly recommend a book I wrote myself. It's called Evolutionary Medicine, in its present paperback form. It's called Breakout, and it describes the evolutionary dynamics of the overuse of chemicals. It's available in a paperback from Sierra Club Books, and it's called Breakout.
Dr. Mark LePay, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious.
My pleasure.
Dr. Mark LePay was a widely recognized toxicologist who has studied the effects of sprays and herbicides on people, water, animals, and ecology in general. He is the author of 112 articles and 11 books on the subject of toxicology, and the book that he recommends is one that he wrote about evolutionary medicine called Breakout. This interview with Dr. Mark LePay was recorded in February of 1997. Dr. Mark LePay died in May of 2005. There are over 750 archives on our website, radiocurious.org, and I'm honored to tell you that Radio Curious is now part of the collection at the Library of Congress. We appreciate your cards, ideas, and letters, and do enjoy hearing from you. The email is curious@radiocurious.org. The postal address is 700 West Smith Street, Ukiah, California, 95482. The phone is 707-621-5075. Ignacio Ayala is the assistant producer. I'm host and producer Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.